second principle is called learning to trust your divine inner wisdom. And the affirmation for this is, I trust in myself and in the wisdom that created me. Because when you learn to trust in yourself, what you're really doing is trusting in the very wisdom that created you. And this key word here is trust. The use of the word trust could be used synonymously with faith. This faith to move mountains, this faith to be able to create things for yourself without having that little smidgen of doubt in there. Remember, as it says in Proverbs in the Old Testament, as you think, so shall you be. Your thoughts, of course, create your reality. And the application of this is that if you're doubting, if you're thinking about even the littlest amount of doubt, then that will be what you will work on. You will act upon that inner world of doubt, and you will manifest the result of doubt. And if you doubt something, then obviously, you know, as Shakespeare said, our doubts are our traitors. William Blake had a wonderful line. He said, if the sun and moon should ever doubt, they would immediately go out. So it's almost like you have to have the faith of the sun and the moon, that you are a divine being that has this divine intelligence within it. And as I talk about trust, it's appropriate to look at the characteristics of this thing that has many names: the God force, the spirit, the invisible intelligence, the soul, the consciousness, the awareness. Whatever name or label that we place on it, it has certain characteristics. And this is a very tough area for us to master, because our egos, the part of us that are rooted in the physical domain, really strongly believe in our separateness from each other and from God. And because we are so attached to our separateness, it is very hard for us to now begin to trust in a unity kind of consciousness. A consciousness which says that I am much more than that which I observe. I am much more than my troubles. I am much more than that which I notice. As the noticer, I have this divine capacity. So what I'm talking about here is an intelligence or a God force or a divine awareness, whatever you want to call it, that is in all things. It's in that tomato seed. It's in the banana seed. It's in you. It's in everything. Everything starts with an idea, and this idea is not in the physical domain. To come to trust in this really means that you have to transcend the ego part of you and say, I have got to learn as an individual, as a particularized part of this divine intelligence, I have to learn about and adopt an intelligence that doesn't know how to particularize. I have to adopt and be a part of an intelligence that is everywhere. That's what universal means. Universal intelligence means there is no place that it is not. Okay? Now, if there's no place that it is not, it means that it is in me. And if it is in me and there's no place that it is not, it is also in everything that I process or perceive to be missing from my life. It's also in that. So if I would like to be able to manifest abundance of some kind, or a relationship, or a healing, or a seller for my home, or a promotion, or whatever it is, the intelligence that I am talking about, this universal divine organizing intelligence that is the highest part of, that represents the highest part of you, is in the very thing that is missing. So here's a key line to learn about learning to trust. When you learn to manifest, you are doing nothing more than manifesting another aspect of yourself. You're manifesting another aspect of yourself. This intelligence doesn't know how to particularize, yet you have got to learn to adopt it and understand it from someone who is convinced that you are an individual who is particularized. You've got to do this with your ego, but yet you've got to transcend the very ego that you're doing it with. And when you do, The ego part of you says, wait a minute, if you get this, you don't need me anymore. So I'm going to do everything I can to keep you from destroying the very thing that supports you. So this doubt will surface all the time. Here are the characteristics of the God force, of that force that's in that tomato plant. And it's like, you can practice this, you can see it in people. I remember one of the great teachers in my life was Fritz Radl, who wrote a book called Controls from Within, and was a student in Vienna. And he taught it in the doctoral program at Wayne State University. And I was really blessed to be in one of his seminars. And I remember him coming in one day to this doctoral seminar. I think there were six of us in the seminar. And he presented us with this story. He was just a great teacher. He never judged any of us. Everybody, he already said, you're great, you've got an A. You're doctoral students, here's your grade, all right? Now, you can come if you want to come. You don't have to come if you don't want to come. It's up to you. I don't put any emphasis on it. If nobody's here, when I get here on Wednesday evenings, it was a three-hour seminar. He said, I'll just meditate. Yeah. And not one person ever missed a class. I don't think I ever worked harder in a seminar than I worked for this man. He wasn't doing what he was doing because he was attached to us doing it the way he thought we should do it. He wanted us to actualize ourselves. And he even said to us, self-actualizing people live from their divine self. They know the divine. And he said, imagine a person who's living at the highest level who comes and shows up at a dinner party. And this dinner party, everyone is dressed in formal attire. Everybody has a suit on, not just a suit, but a black tie. And he said, this person shows up, and he's wearing a pair of jeans and a baseball cap and a pair of sneakers and a T-shirt. And he shows up at this gathering where everyone is dressed in formal attire. He said, the question is, what would he do? And he walked out of the room. He said, I'll be back in 15 minutes. Now, each one of us sat there, and we wanted to prove how cool we were. You know, as a young doctoral student, I was 27 years old. And I had read this, and I had read Maslow, and heard of Maslow doing these kind of things, and I'd even had an opportunity to meet Dr. Maslow and to study with him, which was a great honor. So I wrote what I thought would be his reaction, and each of the rest, the other five of us all did the same. And then he came in, and he said, okay, well, Vane, read your answer. And I read what I had written down, and each person read it. Most of us wrote something like, well, he wouldn't leave, and he wouldn't make a big issue of it, and he wouldn't pay attention to that, and he's not into appearances, and so he wouldn't be concerned with whether the people liked it or not, and he would be independent of the good opinion of other people. I mean, I had it all down, right? And I gave all what I thought would be the right answers, how cool I would be. And each one of us read it, and then Fritz Radl said, none of you got it. He said, the answer is very simple. Three words. He wouldn't notice. Now, it shows you how far we have to go. He wouldn't notice. These are people, and this is a level of trust that I'm trying to get you to understand, which is one in which the unfolding of God is what is seen by this person in each one of us and in everything that he sees in the universe. They see the unfolding of God in each person. Not a physique, not a shape, not a color, not a sex, not an occupation, not a socioeconomic classification. None of those things. What they see is the unfolding of God in all things and in all people. And when you get to this place where you're beginning to trust in this wisdom that created you, you're beginning to understand what this force is like and how different it is from the ego, which is the part of us that has separated ourselves from that force and has believed in our own sense of particularization or individualization. Remember, to develop the kind of trust that I'm talking about, you have to be able to process this intellectual fact that there is an intelligence in the universe that doesn't know how to particularize. It doesn't know how to individualize. It has no preferences. It is everywhere at the same time. It has no judgment. It is like electricity. It's just there. It's everywhere and in everything. And being in everything, it's in you and everything that you would like to manifest. So what you're doing as you manifest is just getting another part of yourself to align. When you learn to manifest, what you're doing is you are aligning your intention with divine intelligence. You are aligning your intention with divine intelligence. You are not creating. You are not bringing something from another world into this world. We don't do that. Everything that's in the world is in the world. We just combine things and we move things around that are already here. It's all here. The creative process is really nothing more than shifting around what is here already and aligning ourselves with it and redistributing it. And so the characteristics of this divine God force, if you will, is that it is everywhere, it is not particularized, it has no preferences, it has no judgment, it is always flowing, it never changes, and most important, it never dies. It never dies. When Lao Tzu, the writer of the Tao, 5 centuries before Christ, was asked the question, "What is real, Master? What is real?" His response was, "That is real, which never changes." Somehow, you have to figure out a way to know the part of you that never changes. When I was writing this book called Manifest Your Destiny, I really wanted to put in a display quote at the beginning of the book that would sort of summarize, if you will, what it was that this book is about and what these ideas are about. And I finished the book. I finished the 9 principles. I wrote out how to apply them. I was very happy to have that done. I agreed to do a program that you're listening to based upon these. But I still didn't have a display quote. Like when I wrote Your Sacred Self, I came across a passage in The New Yorker that I really loved. It said, "All my life I wanted to be somebody. Now I am finally somebody. But it isn't me." Because who I am is not that somebody that I thought I was. Who I am is that part of me that is eternal and sacred. And I thought I was something else. I thought that who I could be would be to have a bestseller or to make a lot of money or to be famous or to do The Tonight Show or to do any of the thousands of things that I've been blessed to have come my way. But that's not me. You have to trust in something else. I was over on Maui with my family, and I had finished the writing and I had finished my preparation for this. And I took the whole family and 3 of their friends to this place on Maui to celebrate for 2 days. It's called the Grand Wailea, which is this really fancy schmancy hotel. And I thought, well, in lieu of sending all the kids to college, we'll spend 2 nights here at the hotel. So it's got all of these water slides and lazy rivers and rope swings and every elevator, everything you could possibly imagine is in there, you know. And I was down there when I was sort of watching all the kids doing it with all of their friends, and they were having a wonderful time. And suddenly it hit me. The night before, I had been in the room and I was thinking about this idea of what can I put at the beginning of this idea about manifesting that will really illustrate what I want to get across. And I said to my wife, I said, "I'm going back upstairs," because in the room at the Grand Wailea, they have a lot of Japanese people coming there to this hotel and to Maui. And they had in the bedstand next to the bed, they had 2 books. They had the Holy Bible and they had the teachings of Buddha. I had been reading through the teachings of Buddha and I noted a couple of things in there. And then I was reading through St. John, which always, St. John always intrigues me in the New Testament. And so I said, I'm going to go back up there. I know it's there. I know it's there. And I just had another one of those strong inner urges or whatever it is to go back up to the room, even though I'd already checked out. And I went up to one of the rooms that we had rented there, and there were three women in there who didn't speak English. And I asked them if I could just go over to the bedstand, and I think they thought I was going to steal the Bible or something. And I said, no, I just want to take this with me to a little room, which was off to the side of the room that we had rented, and I'd like to just look over it for a little while. And they were just, I'm not sure, and all of that. And I said, well, I'm going to do that anyway. And so I took the two books there, and I opened up the Teachings of Buddha. And in the Teachings of Buddha, there was a quote that I really loved. I didn't put it as a display quote, but it's really very powerful. And that quote from Buddha is, the only effort of any intelligent person in this world ought to be to know something which cannot be destroyed by death. The only effort of any intelligent person in this world ought to be to know something, not to believe in something, to know something which cannot be destroyed by death. And I wonder if you know something. Know means trust. If you trust in something without any doubt that cannot be destroyed by death, certainly it's not your body or any of your possessions, all of which will become dust. Everything on the planet, including you, to put it in Ken Wilber's terms, is tomorrow's food. It's a constant recycling in the physical plane. So what part of you cannot be destroyed by death? What part of you is real, if you will, as Lao Tzu put it? But I knew there was something in the New Testament that really had struck me. So I started going through that, and I had a little paper that I was writing on, and I jotted down these two quotations, and I put them as the display quotes. The first is from John 10, verse 34. It says, is it not written in your law, I have said, you are gods? From Jesus Christ. Is it not written in your law, I have said, you are gods? Which is really what you have to understand and embrace and know if you're going to become a manifester. You have to know what you are being told here by a great spiritual teacher, you are gods. And I was just, I said, boy, this is amazing. I was just sent up here off of my rope swing to come up here and write these things down. And the second one was John 14, verse 20, that says, on that day, you will know. See how that word know is always there. You won't believe. You will know. On that day, you will know that I am in my Father, and you in me, and I in you. So what is being talked about here? What is being talked about is not something that is physical. This is not like my arm is in your arm, my spleen is in you. What we're talking about here is something that is beyond the physical, that is in you and in the Father and in me and in everything. And if you get this, if you know this, then you begin to see yourself as connected to this divine intelligence that is everywhere, that is always flowing, that is inexhaustible, that is non-judgmental, that is available for you to plug into, just like electricity. And you can do anything you want with it, like electricity. It'll light up a hospital where everybody is reputed to be ill, and it'll light up a house of ill repute. You can do what you want with it. It is there. It is divine. And you are a piece of it. You are connected to it. And once you trust in this, and once you know this, you almost come to a different perspective in your life. Earlier in the first principle, I had talked about these archetypes that Carl Jung referred to. And in these archetypes, he said that we move from athletes to warriors, to statesmen, to spirit. And then when we are there, we can be all of these things. And one of the things that he also said is that if you don't get to this highest place, this highest archetype, then you will continue to come back and do it. Now, he's talking about reincarnation. And I'm not going to talk about reincarnation here. Reincarnation is an interesting subject. It's an exciting subject. I always liked Eleanor Roosevelt's response when they asked her, do you believe in reincarnation? She said, I don't think it would be any more bizarre for me to show up in another lifetime than it was for me to show up in this one. So, like, I'm open, all right? I'm talking here about this divine intelligence and making the case that it is everywhere. Consequently, there's no place that it's not. I repeat over and over. Therefore, it's in you and all that you would like to have in your life. So we're really talking about a new alignment here rather than mystical, magical stuff. In order to get what I'm talking about here, you have to understand that there are essentially two theories of nature at work. And I'd like to just share these two theories of nature and have you listen, perhaps with a little bit of objectivity, and remember the cookie thief that I put in the very first tape. The thing that you think you know, and you're absolutely certain that you know something, because you just have this inner conviction that it's true, regardless of where it came from, and then it turns out that you were the cookie thief. These two theories of nature, we have been brought up in tribal consciousness, and I'm not here to put down anybody's religious persuasion. This is not a talk about religion. It is a talk about spirituality, higher consciousness, and it is a program about manifesting, not recruiting or putting anybody's religion down. I honor everyone's right to see God and soul and spirit in their own private and personal way. And I celebrate everybody's finding that spiritual loving place within themselves, however they feel it is organized, under whatever set of rules that they think are appropriate. I honor it all. And I think we need more of it in the world, not less. With that said, I would like to examine these two theories of nature very briefly. The first theory of nature is the one that most of us have been brought up on. And this theory of nature is one that keeps us from becoming a manifester, from being able to do what Jesus Christ said we could do, which is all that he has done and even greater things, that there is a divinity within you. This theory of nature says that essentially the universe is a monarchy, and that God is the king, and you are the subjects. And the subjects are inferior to the king. You remember the divine right of kings and how democracy was founded by sort of tossing out this idea that kings had a divine right and that they had a special connection to God. And a lot of them at the time of the French and American revolutions were thrown out and executed and so on, and democracy sort of tended to take over. Well, this theory of nature says that essentially there is a boss. Very often this boss is a male, almost always, I shouldn't say very often, always this boss is a male, usually a white male with a beard, a white dead male in heaven, who controls and judges and is separate from us, and we are the subjects of this boss. We are separate from this boss in such a way that we are basically, as people, as individuals, we are not to be trusted. We can't be trusted. We are smeared, or we are stained, if you will, with sin and untrustworthiness. And that God is what is trusted, but God is outside of us. So we are separate from that. So we're looking for divinity in the boss outside of us, okay? And most of us have grown up with this idea. This is, even though if you read the work of the great spiritual teachers, They all say the kingdom of heaven is within you. Know that you are God. Have in you the same mind as Christ Jesus, who being in the form of God did not consider it robbery to be equal with God. These are quotes from St. Paul and from St. John. There's been a sort of a misinterpretation of this, and what we have done is we have subjugated ourselves to this idea of this first theory of nature of the monarchy, if you will, that the boss is outside of us and we are untrustworthy. Now, the problem with this theory of nature that we have adopted is that we can never come to trust in ourselves because we essentially are conceived with an original stain. We are already, there is something wrong with us. If you are untrustworthy to begin with, in your origination, if you cannot trust in yourself, then you can't even trust in your assessment of yourself as untrustworthy. You see, if you say to yourself, hey, I'm really not trustworthy, but you say, well, wait a minute, I can't trust that. Why not? Because I'm not trustworthy to begin with. Do you see that you will always be lost and you will never be able to trust in yourself as long as you start with this supposition that God or spirit or soul or organizing intelligence is something that is out there that I am separate from and that I am inferior to? You're lost. The second theory of nature says that God or the boss or whatever is not outside of us but is everywhere and is an energy that is love. And that this love does not judge, but is in all things and allows us to have a free will. And that this God, if you will, is everywhere at all times and is loving and caring. The way I see it is I think of God as like the ocean for me. To understand this idea of learning to trust, God is like the ocean, and I am a glass. And I take this glass, and I dip it into the ocean. And I say, okay, what do I have here? And the answer is, I have a glass of God. Now, it's not as big. It's not as strong. It's not as all-knowing. It's not as all-powerful. But it is still God. And just like a wave on the ocean is what the ocean is doing, you are what God is doing. And until you know this, you will never have the trust I'm talking about. You are what God is doing. And if you take a drop of water out of that ocean and you separate it out and you put it over here, you will find that it is weak, that it will collapse, that it has no power, that it can't do anything because it is separated from its source. And the same is true of us. When we separate ourselves from our source, from the divinity that is in all things, we take and make ourselves powerless, impotent, unable to do the divine things that we can do when we are united, both as united with God, or with soul, or spirit, whatever you want to call it, united with each other. You see, it's that separation. It's always that separation. So it's almost like learning to trust in yourself involves trusting in the fact that you have a divinity. And this divinity is evident on the basis of the idea that God is everywhere. And if this intelligence is everywhere, you have to trust that it's in you. And there's no mistakes here. And while you may not always honor everything that you do and that others do, you can see that your essence, your basic essence of what it is that created you in the first place, is that divine organizing intelligence that can never die. You've got to know that. You've got to trust in that. When you trust in this, what you're doing is you're trusting in whatever it is that created you in the very first place. You see, the intellect has trouble with this because the intellect is the mind and the mind is the ego. If you ask most people, where is your center? Where are you centered? They will point to their head. Where do you originate from? Where is your source? Where is your ability to think and to process? They will point to their head and they will say, it's in my brain. My brain is what makes me be able to think and be able to understand concepts and so on. If you ask a spiritual being, where is your source? Where is your center? What is it that gives you the ability to understand these great miraculous things? They will point to their heart. And so heart consciousness is very different than head consciousness. The head consciousness is one which tries to analyze it, tries to figure it out, and has a great deal of difficulty with it because it's coming from this position of separateness. The heart is your intuition. The heart is the part of you that says, I know and I trust, and it works for me, and I don't have to convince anyone else of it. And once you have this, even prayer becomes not like most people think of prayer as like God is like this huge vending machine in the sky, all right? And I put in my tokens, and I behave in a certain way, and certain things are going to come to me. But there's an authentic kind of prayer that is very different than this. And this kind of prayer is one in which your prayer is in communion with God rather than separation from. When I have trouble, if I'm writing and something doesn't seem to come, if I am struggling with any concept in my life, if I don't feel well, even if I have a little bit of a fever or something like that, whenever I feel out of balance, my prayer isn't fix me. My prayer is, I am with you. Help me as the ocean helps that which it particularizes. Help me to find within myself the ability to know what to write. I turn it over to this higher part, but it's not something that I'm ever separate from. That's trust. That kind of trust, in combination with knowing that you're no longer afraid of being God. Know ye that ye are gods, and I am in you, and you are in me, and I am in the Father, and the Father is in me. It's like this is something that we are being taught, and yet we have been conditioned almost to subscribe to another idea which says that I am not trustworthy, I am separate from, I can't do those things. That has to be transcended. You have to understand that in terms of people using it to give fear to you. And our greatest fear is the fear that we're going to be alone, that we're going to be abandoned. But this universal intelligence that is everywhere, this divine intelligence that is universal, that is in all things, how can it abandon us? Wherever we go, it's there. When you trust in that, and know it without any doubt, you begin to see it everywhere. You see it in the flowers. You see it in the sunsets. You see it in your babies and in your mother-in-law. You see it in all places. And what you're doing when you see it is you're recognizing that I am worthy and I am important and I am significant. Yes, I am connected to God. I am what God is doing. And that's the subject of the next principle, honoring your worthiness to receive. Thank you.
This is the end of side four. Please fast forward the tape to the end to cue up side three for your next listening.